Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, where we do our best to help leaders go further, faster.
Well, Andy, as we wrap up this conversation, and as you teased last month, we're going to look at six organizational practices that you've given us to create a culture of collaboration. But before we get to those, I think it's a good idea to reiterate why collaboration is such an important topic.
Well, collaboration is essential to progress. And again, on paper, no one would argue with that. But as we said last time, when I show up at work, I'm thinking, number one, about me. Number two, about my team or my division, my department. And then if I have energy left over, I think about the organization as a whole. But the organization as a whole is never going to be hitting on all cylinders if there is not an organization-wide commitment to collaboration and cooperation. So this is a vision that every leader has to cast at some point. And as we say often, anytime you're trying to shift the culture in an organization, the momentum is against you. It's an uphill battle. And so when it comes to creating any kind of culture, again, you got to name it. You got to wear it. That is, the leader has to model it. You got to brand it. I think you need to teach it. And ultimately, you have to institutionalize it. So this whole conversation is really focused on blending the idea of collaboration into the fabric of an organization.
And Andy, last month, you gave us really the central question that leads to collaboration.
Yeah, the question is simply, what can I do to help? And again, this is a question executives expect subordinates to ask them. But in a healthy organization, in an organization that really has embraced a culture of collaboration, that question flows, you know, laterally. It flows from top to bottom, from the bottom of the org chart all the way to the top. Mm-hmm. Everybody's asking that question and really looking for a way to loan their time, their resources, their energy, and their expertise to whoever needs it in the organization. And when talent and resources flow freely and evenly throughout an organization, that is a rich organization. The organization wins, the departments win, the individuals win.
And Andy, as you said, it's important to teach this, and you've actually taught our organization six practices to create a culture of collaboration. I want to just work through these and get you to comment on each one of them. The first one is do for one what you wish you could do for everyone.
Elaine, we've talked about this before in a different context, but I don't think you can talk about this too much in an organizational context. You know, you remember growing up, we heard as children all the time, well, if I do it for you, I have to do it for everybody. If I do it for you, I have to do it for everybody. The reason I couldn't get an extra brownie in the school lunch line is if I give you one, I have to give everyone one. And of course, we all thought the same thing when we were told that by an adult. We thought, well, no, you don't. You could actually just give me one. It'll be our secret. I think somehow this got imprinted on in our minds, and it becomes, unfortunately, a leadership maxim. If I can't do it for everybody, I'm not going to do it for anybody. But in a culture that's characterized by collaboration, the opposite is true. We look for opportunities to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone. And honestly, Lane, I think sometimes leaders hide behind this. I think sometimes we don't want to do for anyone what we could do for one. So we hide behind, well, if I do it for you, I have to do it for everyone. And I think every once in a while, we just need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, okay, am I hiding behind this? Because if so, I'm certainly not modeling something I want throughout the organization, because leaders, just think about this for a minute. Think about what would happen in your particular sphere of influence if everybody within your sphere of influence looked for an opportunity to do for one or to do for one another what they wish they could do for everyone. I mean, everything gets better, especially the relationships within the organization. So this is, in some ways, again, it's symbolic leadership, but it's important leadership. And I believe it trickles down throughout the whole organization if a leader models this and then appropriately lets it be known how they've modeled this. Again, as we've said before, it's not enough to lead well. You have to be seen leading well. And this is one of those areas where people need to catch us leading well and modeling this principle. And I know what perhaps some of our podcast listeners are thinking. They're like, well, wait a minute, but that's not really fair. And you're right. It's not fair. Do not try to be fair, because you cannot be fair. So give up on fairness and be engaged. And if you do for one what you wish you could do for everyone, you will be engaged and you will model something that can be replicated. If you try to be fair, if you try to treat everybody the same way, at the end of the day, you won't. And besides, that's not really what we want to characterize our companies. I mean, have you ever heard or read an article about a company that thrived because the company was so fair? We just treated everybody the same. We made sure that everybody got exactly what they deserved. No, that's not a leadership principle. In fact, you know, that's like trying to lead with both feet on the brake. So do for one what you wish you could do for everyone.
Andy, the second practice you've given us is systematize top-down service?
Yeah, do for one is really a bit random. It's a bit circumstantial. It's, you know, you see an opportunity to do that and you take advantage of it. But you have to go beyond that. To create a culture of collaboration, there has to be a sense in which, again, the leader has been intentional about blending this idea or working this idea into the rhythm or the systems of the organization. It has to be planned. It has to be scheduled. And I think that most of our podcast listeners can figure out how to do this within their particular context. And so to all of our podcast listeners, I think you're smart enough to figure this out. Mm. And again, it would be crazy for me to try to tell you how to do this within your particular context. But if you just ask yourself the question, what can I do in my particular context within my sphere of influence to bring into the systems or the rhythm of my organization, division, department, business unit, whatever it might be, what can I do to blend into the rhythm of what we do an opportunity to systematize top-down service? And here's a couple of things that we do, and there may be some specific applications, you know, where you work. When my direct reports give me their goals or their objectives, and Lane, you've been in on these meetings through the years, and I look at their top three, you know, agendas or their top three objectives for the year, for the quarter, whatever it might be, then one-on-one, I ask them, okay, how can I help? What can I do to help? What can I do to help you as you do what you've told me you think is important for the organization? And again, your smart direct reports, they know that you can't come to work for them. They're not going to ask for 10 hours a week, but they're going to look at their projects and say, you know what? If you could give me a half a day brainstorming on this, if you could come and just do a little vision cast for my department around this topic. And so again, you know, your smart executives, they know that your time is limited. But when you ask the question, what can I do to help? Again, if that becomes part of the system, if that becomes part of the rhythm, then here's what's going to happen. When their direct reports come to them and say, here are my top three priorities, here are my goals for the quarter or for the year, it's more than likely they're going to begin to ask that same question. And so you have blended into the rhythm of the organization this idea of what can I do to help, which is really the question that drives collaboration. So to put this in the context of shaping organizational culture, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. That's how a leader wears this particular value. But systematizing it is how a leader institutionalizes a value.
Mm. Well, Andy, that leads us to the third practice that you've given us, and this one is create and maintain a sustainable organizational pace.
Much easier said than done, especially this time of the year as we start a new year, right? But here's the truth of the matter. The pace of the organization determines my capacity to loan myself, my time, my focus, and my resources to you. The pace of the organization, the pace of the division that I'm in within the organization determines whether or not I even have the capacity, you know, to loan myself to you, to collaborate, to cooperate with you, because I have my own problems to solve. And if my problems consume 110% of me, I'm not coming your way to help you solve your problems. So the organizational pace really determines whether or not people within an organization even have the capacity to do this, even if they're committed to doing this. As we said last month, when I show up at work, you know, my primary concern, unfortunately, is me, secondly, my team, and third, the organization. So when my margin goes, guess who I quit serving? Not me, you. So show me an overworked staff, and I'll show you turf wars and politics, which, of course, degrades productivity, which, again, mitigates against any kind of collaboration and cooperation. And when that happens, of course, we turn our backs on the marketplace, we defend for ourselves, we feel like we have to, and in the end, again, this just erodes the productivity of the organization. And this comes back on me as a leader because I'm in charge of the pace of the organization.
Well, Andy, the pace of an organization is, it's often difficult to assess, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really difficult for the leader to assess it because oftentimes the leader is insulated from it. I mean, I have plenty of help. You know, I have the direct reports that I want. I can manage my pace. But unfortunately, as I create a sustainable pace for me personally, I may inadvertently create an unsustainable pace for the group that reports to me or the group that reports to them. So, and this is a really good point. I'm glad you brought this up. Before we charge in with our vision of becoming a more collaborative and cooperative organization, we need to understand what's actually going on. That is, we need to gauge the pace, and we will probably need some help doing that. Otherwise, our people are going to look at us like we have no idea what's going on, and they're correct. We don't. So again, before we address collaboration and cooperation, we need to be good stewards of the pace and make sure we understand what's actually going on. And of course, the other challenge is within a large organization, there can be segments or divisions or business units within a company that are required to run at an unsustainable pace. And the other divisions, other business units are like, hey, you know, everything's great here. And of course, in the end, you know, that results in extraordinary resentment. And we've run into that here. We are an events-driven organization. That's what we do. We put on events. But not everybody in our organization is connected to events. And the events people, it's easy for them to look at the non-events people and say, wow, you know, that must be nice working Monday through Friday. You know, we have to work most weekends. Well, at the end of the day, if I want to create an organization that's built around collaboration, I'm responsible for making sure the folks in charge of events aren't going at 110% of their capacity and then come around and say, let's all collaborate and loan ourselves to each other. You know, that's just foolish. So again, there needs to be a sustainable pace. That's required for collaboration. And the organizational leader has to make sure that the pace is sustainable.
Well, Andy, the fourth practice is celebrate and reward it when you see it.
Absolutely. As we say as often as possible on this podcast, what is rewarded is repeated. What's rewarded is repeated. So if we want people to engage or help us create a culture of collaboration, when they do and we see it, we need to reward it. We need to highlight it. We need to celebrate that. And whenever possible and appropriate, we need to celebrate them in front of the rest of our team, in front of the rest of our staff to say, hey, this is important to me. And if you were wondering what in the world is he or she talking about when you talk about collaboration, here is an example of what I'm talking about. Because in the end, whenever we cast vision about anything, everybody thinks they know what we mean by what we say. But when you can illustrate it or point out an illustration, again, that gives people clarity, especially when it comes to values. So at the beginning of just about every meeting, especially if it's small enough for, you know, folks to talk and to share, we ask the question, hey, who helped you be successful? You know, who helped you be successful at what you came here to do? You know, tell us the stories. And again, those stories just reiterate the power and the value of collaboration. From time to time, our staff will walk into a meeting and someone will have put note cards out on the table. Mm-hmm. And we spend the first 10 minutes writing thank you notes. And we ask the question, who helped you this weekend or who helped you last week, you know, do what you came here to do? Let's just stop and we're all going to write a thank you note. And again, that just reiterates. And again, it's a way of systematizing or building into the rhythm of the organization this whole idea that collaboration is important. So, yeah, when you see it, reward it. When you see it, celebrate it. And again, this is just another way of connecting the dots and highlighting the actual interdependency of the roles within the organization. But again, if we don't do that, it's just not going to happen.
Andy, practice number five really directly addresses something you talked about last month. It's confront your ego.
Yeah, I think we have to stop and ask ourselves this horrifying, terrifying question every once in a while, and that's simply this. What's most important to me, building a great organization or creating a name for myself? Building a great organization or creating a name for myself? Because to whatever extent I give my time and energy to building a name for myself, I am making a withdrawal from the collaboration and the cooperation within the organization. Because collaboration says, I'm here for you, just like you're here for me. Mm-hmm. But when you're here for me and I'm here for me, there are going to be ripple effects throughout my department or my division. And all of us have worked for people who were there and were in it to win it, you know, for themselves. We've all seen those folks. We've worked for those folks. We've, in some cases, found those folks working for us. And it just creates, you know, a tension that takes away from the sense of collaboration and, hey, we're all in this together to do something extraordinary together that we will all benefit from. So I just think every once in a while we have to confront our ego and ask that difficult question. And I say this to leaders all the time, and they snicker and laugh, and no one ever writes this. No one ever writes this down. I say, look, if you see your staff and if you see your employees as a supporting cast for your career, tell them. And everybody just laughs like, I would never say that. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you say that? That's an indictment on you. If you think that's part of what drives you and you do see them as a means to your end, why wouldn't you tell them? Well, I could never say that. Well, you know, you need to wrestle that to the ground, because that will show up in your style, that will show up in your tone, and ultimately, it will keep you from practicing what you preach, especially when it comes to collaboration. Because collaboration says, how can I help you? What can I do to help you? I am as much here for you as you are here for me. And I think that's extremely unhealthy.
And Andy, the final practice for creating a culture of collaboration is drop the term loyalty from your organization's vocabulary.
Yeah, and this is not a problem probably in most organizations, but every once in a while this pops up, or we'll hire somebody from a different organization, or I'll talk to a peer who tells horror stories about the leader, whether it's a manager or their boss or a CEO, who requires personal loyalty. In other words, not loyalty to the mission and vision of the organization or even to the organization, but loyalty to an individual. Mm. This is very unhealthy, and ultimately, I think it's dangerous. Loyalty is the result of something, and so is disloyalty. Mm. So requiring loyalty is basically saying, I've already lost. If I have to require you or expect you to be loyal to me, then either I think you're not a loyal person or there's something wrong with me. So in a healthy organization, there's loyalty to the division, the department, the organization, ultimately. But requiring loyalty to an individual, I think whenever you bump into that within an organization, you may need to start looking around, because those are seeds that ultimately, when they take root, generally go in unhealthy directions. And Lane, our listeners know this. If a person has to ask for loyalty, or if they go so far as to demand it or have someone sign a document, I think they're the one with the loyalty issue. They're the one with the loyalty challenge. Because in an organization characterized by collaboration, I'm here for you as much as you're here for me.
Well, Andy, as we wrap up this conversation of creating a culture of collaboration, what would be your final thoughts?
I think the place to start is the place we started today's podcast, and to look for an opportunity to do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And then write on a note card somewhere and keep it where no one else can see it, and just write down the question, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? What can I do to help? And if you'll just take that simple question and you'll take this simple practice of looking for opportunities to do for one what you wish you could do for everyone, and you have to do it just public enough to where, again, it becomes symbolic leadership. This is a habit. This is a question. This is a practice that you want replicated throughout the organization. I think that's the place to start. Look for that special thing you can do for one that you can't do for everyone. Don't try to be fair. Be engaged. And every once in a while, at the end of the conversation, ask the question, okay, what can I do to help?
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us. Don't forget to check out the andystanley.com website, where you can find the leadership application guide to go with today's podcast.